Hello and all, welcome to the Sweet Spot, your go-to golf tipping show brought to you by The Racing Post. It's Jack Reeve, it's Steve Palmer with three tournaments for the first time in 2024, three tournaments to look forward to, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, the Bahrain Championship and Live Golf Mayakoba, two to look back on in the shape of the Farmers Insurance Open and the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. Steve Palmer, I'm getting a vibe off of you this morning. There's a slight spring in your step.
Is there really? I had a great weekend away from the golf. I mean, we'll get to the golf disappointments. I had full custody of the kids all weekend. The wife went away to help her mum move house. So I had loads of options. And we went to the Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium on the Saturday. So I've learnt more about our solar system. Yeah, maybe that's put me at peace knowing that, how small Earth is and how insignificant we all are. There's so many planets out there and moons. There's more than one moon, so I learned all about that.
What was the most fun fact you learned, Steve, there?
Just that there's more than one moon. I think it's naive of me to think, but I just thought there was one moon, but every planet's got a load of moons going around them, all shapes and sizes. There's one moon that's sort of shaped by a nose. I can't remember what planet that was next to. But yeah, it's a fascinating trip to the Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium. I recommend that. And then on Sunday, I made my point-to-point debut.
Did you?
Yeah. I took the kids to Millbourne St Andrew, lovely part of the world, and watched sort of raw racing. I was really impressed with point-to-point. I didn't know what to expect. Well, yeah, I made a few quid at that. That's probably why I'm so chipper, because I made some money on betting on horses I knew nothing about. A complete miracle on Sunday. Had a 7-4 winner in the first. The first bet I had was a 7-4 winner. Had a 2-1 winner that won by about 100 lengths.
Wow.
Octo John is my new favourite horse. So yeah, that's probably why I'm feeling good.
Did you go sort of dressed in tweed and sat at the back of your big Land Rover?
My dress was a problem, actually. No, I had no. I don't own any tweed, and wearing my shiny white trainers was a horrendous error. Like, I dressed my daughter in her best trainers, which are pristine white as well. And then I got there, and I just thought, what was I thinking? Yeah, the lack of preparation. So all of our shoes were ruined. But we could buy some new shoes. That's Octo John, which is the fastest horse in the world. If any horse racing fans watching this Racing Post broadcast, keep an eye on Octo John. I think he's going to go places.
Octo John, maybe one to add to the Racing Post trackers, Steve. Excited. I mean, they could have seen you coming though for the first time if you've rocked up in your brand new Adidas kind of sporty trainers.
Yeah, I think that the stakes, they seemed surprised by my stake level early on. They weren't expecting that, but then they had the last laugh. I mean, I still ended leaving the place laughing, but I backed a 4-6 loser as my last bet. And as soon as I placed that 4-6 bet, I walked away and I thought, that was a poor decision, because I realised that if it had won, my happiness level wouldn't really go up much, because I was already really happy, but my sadness level would go down a little bit. Mm. So when that horse lost, I took a little bit of the gloss off it. But yeah, I'm a point-to-point fan forevermore now.
Did the kids enjoy it? I mean, I always think, watching horse racing, I mean, particularly point-to-point, it's very, raw, isn't it? And seeing impressive animals like that in the...
Well, you can get closer.
Skin.
You know, if I took them to Royal Ascot or Cheltenham Festival, or the Festival, as we like to call it, I don't think they would have got as close to the action. No, they definitely wouldn't have got as close to the action as we did. We could smell the horses; they were so close. I mean, one horse during one race was sort of veering to the right, and Tommy Tiger was just there, and a small rail between us and this massive horse, and it literally just tickled our nose as it went by. I thought, blimmin' heck, we could be in trouble there. If that got smashed through the fence, it probably would have killed my child, which would have really taken the gloss off the day.
But that's how close
you get to the action. It's just, you're just virtually riding the blimmin' horses. I can't wait to go back to point-to-point.
Well, wow, what a brilliant weekend you've had, Steve. And I'm glad, because your New Year's resolution, wasn't it? It was to keep your knickers out of a twist. And the golf betting-wise, I mean, it could have quite easily, you could have quite easily got things twisted. It didn't quite go our way last week. Let's start in the Farmers Insurance, because that finished on the Saturday. And we had our first ever French PGA Tour winner in the shape of Pavon. It was brilliant to see him get it done.
It was. I mean, it was from a neutral's point of view, I guess. Yeah. I mean, as a big Hoggard fan, I'll come to that. It was a bit of a pill to swallow. But yeah, he's 125-1 winner. So another PGA Tour event going to turn to a rag. 125-1. I'm surprised he was that short, to be honest. I mean, he's got no experience stateside, really. Course debut. But yeah, that's cut to the chase. That third shot on the 72nd hole, unbelievable. Such a horrible lie.
And we're saying, Steve, that he completely went against all caddy advice as well. The caddy had said to lay up, make your par, and try and move on from there. And he said, no, this is mine to win.
Well, hats off to Pavon, or Pavone, as the stateside commentators were insisting on calling him for some reason. Pavone, that pulled off a really gutsy shot there, because there's the water in front of the green. I mean, that could have gone anywhere. I mean, I'm with the caddy. I think, try and get into the playoff maybe. But, to get it close enough to make birdie from there was remarkable. And, especially just missed a tiddler on the 17th hole. He's missed a short putt on the 17th hole. It looks like he's imploding. And then that third shot, just was a hammer blow for Hoggard fans. I mean, the Hoggard fans, that's such a tough week. It was a week of agony.
Did you back the Hoggard double at any point?
Well, I backed them both in hearty singles, obviously pre-tournament Rasmus and in running before the final round Nikolai. I mean, Nikolai finished alone in second place. He's gone 4-9 when Pavon's hacking his way up the 72nd hole. Hoggard's strong favourite, because he's hit an amazing drive to set up a pretty straightforward birdie for him. It looked like a playoff at worst for Hoggard, didn't it? And then Pavon, he's conjured the up and down of the season from the rough there. I feel for the Hoggard twins. I think it'd be probably the most traumatic day the Hoggard twins have had since they emerged from Mrs. Hoggard's womb 22 years ago. I mean, they were crying 22 years ago when they were born, and I think they were probably all crying at the weekend, because there was two great opportunities went begging there. And as I say, yeah, for me personally, it was a hammer blow, because I love the Hoggard twins.
I mean, lessons learned, I'm sure, Steve. In terms of the Raz Al-Khaimah, won by Ollison, who's got quite the record really now. Was it his eighth or his ninth victory?
Eight. Eight. I mean, and did you watch the putting performance? I mean, goodness me.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could have got a Thunder Bears putter, I would have snapped over my knee, thrown it in the nearest lake, because, that was the club which stopped Rasmus Hoggard winning the Raz Al-Khaimah Championship. Yeah, the final three rounds, I've never seen a putting performance like Ollison was just in the zone on the greens. Yeah. It did not matter where he was on the green. You fancied him to hole it. And, on Sunday, Hoggard's got odds on for the tournament. This is the Hoggard, Mrs. Hoggard, holding her head in despair, because both of her sons have gone odds on to win their respective tournaments during the final round, and neither of them have won. I mean, Hoggard got level. He started Sunday four shots behind. Yeah. He's level through seven holes, Jack. So he's destroyed. Who do you fancy to win from there? I mean,
Mr. Hoggard's
odds on. I'm watching that before my trip to the point to point. I think I'm taking a wheelbarrow full of readies to the point to point betting ring with my Rasmus winnings. I'm dancing around the lounge, and then the eighth hole was such a showstopper, wasn't it? The eighth hole, Rasmus hit three terrible shots in a row: slice drive, shanky second shot, poor bunker shot, made a six. And then Thunder Bear makes an eagle. Three-shot swing on one hole completely changed the complexion of the golf tournament. You could see all the pressure lift off Thunder Bear's shoulders, and he cruised home from there. So, yeah.
If you hadn't have watched the final round, you'd seen Ollison start four clear. He wins it by six. You just assume that he's had a really easy day of it. But it wasn't. I mean, it just wasn't the case, was it?
Yeah. No, I wish I had. I wish I just slept through that. But, at least we got Kaita Nakajima in the places, Jack, as well. So we got two in the places. I mean, you've got to be grateful for small mercies at the moment, the way this PGA Tour season's going. But, Rasmus finished second, Kaita Nakajima finished fourth. We've got a real player on our hands there. We'll talk more about our Japanese friend later.
Absolutely. Well, we're certainly knocking on the door, Steve. As you say, PGA Tour's had a really funky start to the season and a couple of places so far. So let's move on to this week's tournament, shall we? We've got three to go at, and I know this always excites you hugely. We've got the return of LIV Golf, and I'm sure we'll talk about their newest signing later on in the show. Shall we start with the Bahrain Championship, Steve?
Yes, Palmer? Yes. Chronological order is always to be welcomed.
Okay. We haven't been in Bahrain for a while, have we? It's
No, sir. No, sir. I've never been to Bahrain, but 2011, DP World Tour, 2011, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we're at the Royal Golf Club. Talk us through the layout.
Royal Golf Club Bahrain, 7,261 yards, par 72, four par fives, a Colin Montgomery design. We have three pieces of course form to go on: the 2011 Volvo Golf Champions, a DP World Tour event won by Paul Casey, and the Bahrain Open in 2019 and 2020. That was a low-grade MENA Tour event. It's a Paspalum grass track. The main defence in the past has been the greens. You have really undulating dance floors. Ian Poulter gave him a lot of stick after that Volvo Golf Champions, said they were rubbish. They've had some of the slope taken out of them since then, but yeah, I still think finding the right sections of these dance floors is the key to success. So accurate approach shots. We've got three breezy days in the forecast, Friday, Saturday and Sunday. So you've got to play well in the wind. And we won't have any issues with darkness this week, Jack, because the back nine has got floodlights. The weather forecast looks good. I don't think they're going to need to use them, but it's nice to know they're there.
Have you ever played night golf?
I've not. I've done driving range night golf, but not an actual golf course. But you can tee off here at 8:30 p.m. Last tee time's 8:30 p.m. They let you tee off.
Wow. Oh, that's fun. It's good. It is good fun. I mean, my eyesight isn't the best, as you can probably tell. I mean, it feels like when you hit a white ball into a black sky, you should be able to see easier. But I find it the opposite. I find it really difficult to track balls in the night.
Where was that then? Was this in Bahrain?
No, we played some night golf in Dubai. And it was great fun. But I mean, seeing is difficult, I found.
But it'd be interesting if they get to use them this week. But I don't think they'll need to. We've got a field of 132 going to post, I should have said.
132 going to post. Let's read through the top of the market. Rasmus Højgaard, a convincing 9-1 favourite. Next up, Jordan Smith and Yannick Paul, 18-1, alongside Keita Nakajima. Steve Palmer mentioned earlier on in the show, he's around about 18-1. Xander Lombard, that we learnt last week, homeschooled at 20-1. Antoine Rosner, 22s, alongside Sebastian Soderberg. Bigger the rest. Steve Palmer, how many selections for the Bahrain Championship?
We've got six selections in this, but don't be alarmed because two of them are enormous prices and we've only got two in the PGA Tour event and we've only got one in the LIV event. So it's a 6-2-1 formation.
Are we top heavy or bottom heavy? I'm not quite sure which. Are we defensively minded or all out attack here?
It's a great question. It depends whether you're standing on your head or you're standing on your feet. Let's not get bogged down in this.
First of the six. Let's take it away, Steve.
Keita Nakajima, 20-1. We talked last week about him having two significant handicaps going into the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. It was his course debut and his first tournament of the year. The first round 72 was probably a reflection of that. But once he got settled in, my word, he looked like that Group 1 horse that we thought he was, Jack. This is a thoroughbred we're dealing with here. Rounds of 66, 66, 67 over the final 3 days. A share of fourth place. A former world number one amateur with the potential to threaten world number one professional. I only say it now that won't you? He's won four times on the Japan Tour, runner up six times on the Japan Tour. He ended last year with Japan Tour form figures of 10-1, 20, 2-4-2. And now he's out the blocks with a 4-foot Ras Al Khaimah. And he can handle the wind in the forecast. You know, you might be concerned that he might not be able to handle the wind. I'll give you some reassurance, Jack. As an amateur playing in the 2018 Australian Open, Nakajima finished fifth. It was howling in Sydney that week, the Lakes course. Yet an 18-year-old Nakajima showed he could handle it. And he won the Australian Amateur Championship that year at Lake Karrinyup in Perth. Always windy in Perth, Jack. I used to live there. I know it well. Always windy in Perth. He's proven he can handle the wind. And I've got some icing to go on this delicious Japanese cake, Jack. I didn't mention this last week and I should have done. The venue for Nakajima's Asia Pacific Amateur title in 2021. Prestigious event that gives you access to, it gave him access to the 2022 majors. That was at Dubai Creek. He's won a prestigious amateur event in the Middle East before. I'm so excited about Kaito Nakajima. It's hurting, Jack. It's hurting in my loins.
I must say, Steve, I mean, I love Nakajima too. If there was one thing in life at the moment I wasn't worried about, and there's lots of concerns in modern day life, it was how Nakajima handled the wind. That's one thing I wasn't concerned about. But thanks for putting me at peace anyway.
I thought I sensed some concern in it.
Absolutely not.
Brow. That might have been down to potential World War III, or it might have been down to Nakajima's inability in the wind. So I misjudged that.
I'm sure we'll find more concerns later on the show. Kaito Nakajima, Steve's main selection for the Bahrain Championship. 5 to go. Who's the next?
Yannick Paul, 18-1. I think this is a test of approach play more than anything. There's water in play over the final four holes. The champion is going to have to hold his nerve over some daunting approaches down the stretch. Yannick Paul, one of the best iron players in the business. He started the year with 8th place in the Dubai Invitational. He missed the cut by a shot in the Desert Classic, but last week, straight back down to business. 4 rock-solid rounds for 4th place in the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. We know he likes desert golf, lived in Colorado for a long time, won the 2020 Arizona Open. We know he's a greens and regulation machine. We know he's going to be in the Bahrain mix.
Yannick Paul, I mean, how many times have we backed Yannick Paul over the past 12 months? It would be lovely to just see him get it done, because he's always sniffing around, isn't he? He's always there or thereabouts, but just get over the finish line, Yannick.
Well, that's it. Testing approaches, loads of wind. I want to be on great approach players. And, Yannick is arguably the best in this field.
Absolutely. Who's the next?
Another brilliant approach player, Alex Fitzpatrick at 28-1. Brilliant iron player. We can rely on him peppering flagsticks this week, finding the right sections of those dance floors. He's earned a DP World Tour card at the end of last season. He was runner-up in the ISPS Handy World Invitation in August, 5th in the European Masters. He won a Challenge Tour event in the summer. He's a fully established DP World Tour player now. He played well in Australia just before Christmas. He was 8th in the Australian Open, and he started this year just as brightly. 16th in the Dubai Desert Classic, 16th again last week in the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. It seems only a matter of time before he wins a DP World Tour event. This looks a golden opportunity. I mean, last week we were talking about the Hoggar brothers. This could be the week we're talking about the Fitzpatrick brothers. You know, I've long held the view that Alex is as good as his brother. Yeah, I think he's going to show it over time, and he's really hitting his stride now.
Which set of parents do you think will be put in the nicer care home, the Fitzpatricks or the Højgaards?
Hopefully neither. I mean, my mother always says never put me in a care home. You know, she just doesn't want to go in a care home. She'd rather just, well, I don't know what she'd rather do, but these guys could go in the greatest care home in the world, couldn't they?
Some of these care homes now, though, Steve, they look so impressive. There's one that's just been built down the road. It's almost like a town. It's got a restaurant in there. It's got cafes. It's like a cruise ship for old people. It's incredible.
I'm almost looking forward to getting into one of them. But you've probably got to pay top dollar to get in that one, though, haven't you? I feel for the guys that have to go in the ones that look like prison cells. Mm. So I'm dragging the mood down.
Enough about care homes. 3 to go, Steve, in Bahrain. Who's next?
Harrison Endicott. Let's bring the mood back up with Harrison Endicott, who is available at 60-1. Who won? He won the PGA Tour qualifying score. You might think that doesn't exist anymore, but it's back. The PGA Tour qualifying... Oh, God, I ran out of speaking ability. It's the pressure of having 3 tournaments, knowing it's all got to be quick.
You've broke out of the trap so quick, Steve. I mean, let's pace ourselves, because we have got 3 tournaments. I mean, the energy you're bringing is superb.
If it goes over the hour mark, let it go over the hour mark. People panic too much.
People won't focus for an hour. They'll see it's an hour and they won't watch it.
That's all nonsense, isn't it? If it's good, it's good and they'll watch it. Right. He won the PGA Tour qualifying score, my friend. It was a 4-shot victory just before Christmas. You know, gutsy victory. Loses a card, gets it straight back. His new campaign started well with 39th place in the American Express. He missed the cut in the Farmers last week, but he wasn't expecting much. He said that course doesn't suit him. The fact he could pack his bags on a Thursday night, you know, Wednesday start, Thursday cut, means he's got plenty of time to freshen up, get to Bahrain. And I just think he'll love this assignment. He's typically excellent on approach and he's great in the wind. You know, they're the two main attributes I'm looking for this week. He hasn't qualified for the Pebble Beach event, so he's looking for a DP World Tour victory. And I like his chances. And he's got that magic power we've been looking for, Jack, of being the reformed drinker. Chris Kirk and Grayson Murray, of course, reformed drinkers. They showed the power of sobriety this January by winning on the PGA Tour. Endicott is another one who's given up the demon drink. He said he was sick of feeling like crap. He said alcohol put him in a really bad place. He was a bit of a vino monster by all accounts. But he's been sober since the end of the summer. Says he feels $1 million. I think his career is going to go from strength to strength.
There's certainly something in it. I mean, I've got, 2 days left of dry January. And you do notice you wake up with far more clarity around things. Did you have a pint of Guinness at point to point? That was probably the drink of choice, wasn't it?
No, it was a lager. I was having a few lagers to get over the Rasmus disappointment and then focus on the horses. I know you've only got a couple of days to go. I hear so many positive stories like this, Jack. I've got a friend who runs a cafe and as soon as he stopped drinking, his sales figures went through the roof in the cafe. He was so focused on the business, getting the menus right, getting the food better. And he says it's transformed his business. You know, he was struggling financially and now he's absolutely loaded through quitting the booze and, having a sharper mind to attack his business practice.
Well, I guess it does make sense. I wouldn't have assumed that you could sort of make a flat white better on a clear mind. But
you'd be surprised, Jeff. You would be surprised, my friend.
There we go. Yeah. Harrison Endicott. Next up on the list. What, we got two to go?
Yeah, here come the big prizes, the whoppers. Yeah. And the first whopper is Hugo Cassoud. 225-1 available about Hugo Cassoud, who is probably already the most famous Hugo since Hugo Ekiok. I mean, he was a magnificent centre half, wasn't he, Hugo Ekiok? Tragically died in 2019. But like Hugo Ekiok did, Hugo Cassoud has a big physical presence. He's a big, tall man, long levers. And, things are happening for Hugo now. He won the Challenge Tour, in India in April. He pretty much wrapped up his DP World Tour card with a golden fortnight in the United Arab Emirates. He likes this part of the world. He likes desert golf. He was 15th in the Abu Dhabi Challenge, then runner-up in the UAE Challenge. He was 34th in Ras Al Khaimah last week, closed with a 67. So I think Cassoud is going places. I think he'll probably get offered a live place soon because he's the closest player on the circuit to being called Mr. Saudi. Hugo Cassoud. They'd probably give him $50 million to put an eye on the end of his name, and he's Hugo Cassoudi. So I think he's got a big chance this week. He's certainly a better chance than 225-1. He's going to be inspired by Matthew Pavone, isn't he? I'm glad I got a Frenchman in my team this week. I think there is inspiration there. I toyed with Frederic Lacroix. I toyed with Julien Gélière. But I think Cassoud is the best value of the Frenchman.
I must admit, I've been scrolling up and down the bookmakers list I've got in front of me. I've just found him, actually. There we go. Hugo Cassoud. I mean, that is a cracking name. Hugo.
It's a beauty, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I love Hugo the name Hugo.
225-1. So are you telling me, Steve, your final selection is bigger price than 225-1?
No. No, I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you it's slightly shorter. I think it's 200-1. It's 200-1. It's Matthew Baldwin, who is exceptional in the wind. You know, brilliant at controlling his ball in the breeze. We've got three windy days in Bahrain. Baldwin won the SDC Championship in windy conditions in making his DP World Tour breakthrough in March last year. It was a seven-shot victory. He relished the conditions. He's a Southport man. Cut his teeth at Royal Birkdale. A windy Bahrain this week is a walk in the park compared to a windy Royal Birkdale. He won on the Challenge Tour in 2011, and he's got competitive course experience of this week's track from that MENA Tour, those MENA Tour events. Remember I was talking about them? There's two players that caught my eye in the MENA Tour results. Baldwin, who was 21st in the 2019 Bahrain Open at Royal Golf Club, and Joshua Grenville Wood, who was second in the 2019 event when he was ranked outside the world's top 2,000. Grenville Wood's getting his act together a bit now. He's a local lad. He's a UAE. He represents the UAE. And he played well last week, but he's a real slugger. He's got so much swing speed. I think he might come unstuck in the wind this week. If it wasn't breezy, I'd probably chance him. But Baldwin, a much more controlled operator he's been narrowly missing cuts, but I think, you know, this week he'll make an impact.
Great stuff, Steve. I mean, the one concern, I mean, you've picked out some names there out of the blue that I wasn't expecting. I'm concerned, though, because we haven't had any updates on sort of the personal lives of these players. And usually you provide some form of update on, you know, Laurie Cantor's kitchen fitting or something.
Well, I can tell you Joshua Grenville Wood has got ADHD. I was so close to chancing this week because he's a big prize. He played well last week. He's got a good record in all these events in this part of the world. And he says the ADHD helps him. It makes him obsess over practice. And he sees it as a massive positive to his golf game. I really like his swing, but I don't think he's got a second gear. I think it's all full throttle with him. And in three windy days, it was enough to put me off. Whereas Baldwin, you know, you can rely on Baldwin to find fairways and, you know, he relished these conditions. So yeah, they're my six. And Rasmus, if you want to talk about Rasmus.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, Rasmus, and I know you've spoken about why you usually avoid Jordan Smith before, but after the recent performances of Højgaard, I didn't know whether you'd be mixing at the prices.
Well, he's 9-1 now, Rasmus. Obvious chance, been putting superbly, but he's hit some wild drives, like that one I mentioned at the eighth hole on Sunday. You know, windy week. It's going to require real discipline at times this week. He was one over par for the final 11 holes on Sunday. You know, closed with a miserable bogey six. You know, it's just such a disappointing weekend for the Højgaard family. I just wonder whether Rasmus can lift himself for this week. It's his fourth consecutive week of competition. You know, obvious chance, but prefer mine at the prices.
Okay, great stuff, Steve. Thanks very much. We'll recap those later on in the show if you haven't jotted those down. Let's move over to the PGA Tour. We've mentioned there have been four big price winners so far. It's the Pebble Beach Pro-Am this week. It's a really strong field, so maybe we might be seeing a slightly shorter price winner. We should know what this is all about, Steve, but talk us through the layout anyway.
Well, we're at Pebble Beach Golf Links and Spyglass Hill Golf Club, both in Pebble Beach, California. Pebble Beach is 6,972 yards. Spyglass Hill is 7,041 yards, both par 72s. Players get 18 holes on each course over the first 2 days. Then Pebble Beach will host the final 36 holes. It's a pro-am for the first 2 days. Then the Ghostbusters and all the other annoying amateurs go home. Professionals only at the weekend, thank goodness. Because this has become an elevated designated signature event now. 20 million in the prize pot, 3.6 million to the winner. We used to have 156 runners, three courses, and a 54-hole cut. Now it's got this new status. We've only got 80 runners, two courses, and no cut. The other course form for punters to look at is from the US Opens at Pebble Beach, 2010 and 2019, the most recent, and the US Amateur Championship there, the most recent ones, 1999 and 2018. We got some heavy rain just before the tournament. Tournament Eve is going to be raining quite heavily, so we have soft terrain. Further light rain expected during the event. Relatively calm weather expected. Friday afternoon is the windiest day. Quite a cool week. 13C is the peak. Accurate approach play, sharp putting. Always been the key to success at Pebble Beach.
Okay, Steve, thanks very much. Let's take a look through the top of the market. Joint favourites in the shape of Scotty Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, 8-1. Victor Hovland, 12s. Xander Schauffele 14-1, Jordan Spieth 18-1, Max Homer the same price, Patrick Cantlay 20s, bigger the rest. Steve, a really competitive top of the market. Two selections. Yes. Who are we looking at?
The 21's just gone, but Max Homer 18-1, still a fantastic each way bet. Narrowly missed out on the places for us last week. It was heartbreaking. He tied 13th. He bogeyed the 16th hole. Had a lovely each-way double running with Rasmus and Homer. And, had Rasmus 7 places, Homer 10 places, and that bogey at 16 scuppered it. But he was slow from the gates last week. He had an extremely soggy south course to deal with on the Wednesday. I think it was unlucky, the players that had to play the south course on the Wednesday, because it was so wet, so long. A 70 there was not a bad effort. It was the Thursday 70 at the North course, which wasn't good enough. Just wasn't sharp enough at the North course. Left himself a lot of work to do over the final 36 holes. Played well over the final 36. 71-69 at the South. Finished 13th. That was only his second start of the year. I think he'll come on nicely for that run. He loves teeing up in California. Four of his six PGA Tour victories have come in the Golden State. Relishes Poana greens. You know, a lot of players lose their mind putting on Poana. He knows that, and he loves the fact that he loves how comfortable he is on Poana. And the key to this bet is how well he's played there when he's been a lesser light. You know, Homer finished 29th in this event in 2015 when he was ranked 278th in the world. He was 10th in 2019. When he was ranked 718th in the world. He was 14th in 2020 when ranked 95th in the world, and he was 7th in 2021 when ranked 96th in the world. So he hasn't teed up in this event since then. He hasn't teed up as a member of the elite. He's got on the Pebble Beach Pro-Am leaderboard as a lesser light. Now he's a fully fledged member of the golfing elite. He's won 5 PGA Tour titles since he last teed up at Pebble Beach. He's played in a Ryder Cup. He's won a DP World Tour event. He's the world number 7. He's got no weaknesses. He's got no weaknesses. I'll say that again. He's got no weaknesses. I think he peppers pins all week. I think he holds more putts than anyone else. And I think he brings some sanity to PGA Tour punters who just do not want another outside. We've had 4 massive prize outsiders winning. I think Homer is going to stop the rot.
There was so much information in that sort of minute monologue, Steve. That was really impressive. I mean, you're always on top form, but there was a lot. I was just listening and the numbers were whirring around my brain.
Well, let me repeat the most interesting one in my humble opinion. In 2019, he finished 10th in this event when he was ranked 718th in the world. I mean, you know, he's come on leaps and bounds, hasn't he, in those five years.
It's even more impressive. I still assume that 2019 was sort of last year. In fact, it was 5 years ago, makes it slightly scary.
Yeah,
I saw
someone
in the pub the other day who just turned 18. And they handed their sort of driver's license over to because they got ID'd. And the date of birth was something stupid. I was like, no way you 18. And yeah, the math checked out. It's just, doesn't make sense.
You're getting old, Jack. You're getting old. I mean, I was in a pub the other day and I just was convinced that the bar staff were underage. They just couldn't possibly, they looked so young behind the counter there. I thought there was something illegal was happening, but I said to the lad, "How old are you?" And he goes, "I'm 21." I said, "You look about 12, mate."
Fresh face.
Yeah. I think that's what happens, isn't it? Wait, apparently you're getting old when you think policemen look young.
Is that right?
Somebody told me that once, and I feel that now.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I didn't know that theory. Max Homer, the main pick, Pebble Beach, the next and the final selection there.
Yes, Matthew Fitzpatrick, 33-1, made for this assignment. Keep it tidy from tee to green. Show off your short game class. Fitzpatrick finished 12th in the 2019 US Open at Pebble Beach. He was 6th in the 2022 Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Last year, he was carrying an injury when he came to this event. Ignore the missed cut. His neck was in bad shape. He had no swing speed. He got himself back to full fitness slowly but surely last year. Then he won the RBC Heritage in April. That was another elevated, designated event by the coast. It's the same deal this week. He won another coastal event in the Dunhill Links Championship in October. He was 4th in the Hero World Challenge in another coastal event in December. He loves this sort of assignment. He opened up this year with 14th place in the Century. Then he missed the cut in the Sony Open, but he had 2 good excuses for that Sony Open flop. It was his course debut. Debutants usually struggle at Waialae, you know, a well-established PGA Tour venue. And his clubs got lost in transit from the Century to the Sony.
That happens. I always see pros moaning about clubs going missing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this should not be happening. If you're a pro with all that money, just ship it in a different method.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, he was fuming with Hawaiian Airlines. He was venting his spleen to Hawaiian Airlines on the Twitter sphere. So I think he had excuses for the Sony miscut. I think he's a surefire Pebble Beach contender. So, yeah, I'm really happy with my two-pronged attack. I don't like the market leaders.
No, I like the look of that as well. The other thing I didn't, and it makes sense really, but I'd never really thought about it, that darts players can't carry their darts in hand luggage because they're deemed a weapon. That just feels strange. I mean, what are darts players sort of travelling with other than their sort of oversized shirt, some black trousers and shoes and dart? I mean, they're not taking loads of clothes, are they? I mean, Luke Littler, I'm sure, lives in that sort of Under Armour hoodie. That's all I've ever seen him in.
I mean, in the olden days, they probably packed like 50 cans of special brew, but they're all so fit now, aren't they? The modern darts player is
well,
apart from the new kid on the block, Luke Littler. I mean, he likes his kebabs, doesn't he? But yeah, Luke Humphreys is a picture of health.
That's true.
Garen. Yeah. So I don't fancy the market leaders, Joe. Would you like me to tell you why?
I went on to Luke.
I love talking about darts.
So Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Victor Hovland. I mean, plenty. Certainly, 8-1 Rory McIlroy in good form. I'm sure that will appeal to many.
Yes, it will appeal to many. But he missed the cut in the 2010 US Open at Pebble. He missed the cut in his only Pebble Beach Pro-Am appearance in 2018. He was ninth in the 2019 US Open at Pebble, but I don't think this course plays to his strengths. You know, it's not a driver's course. I mean, you know, most drives end up in the same section of fairways. There's no way of overpowering Pebble Beach with your driving ability. You know, driver's the best club in Rory's bag. And particularly in the Pro-Am, when you have the weaker setup, because we've got the Ghostbusters and the Amateurs for 2 days, so they can't make it too penal. And he wouldn't be playing this if it wasn't an elevated designated senior event. This is not on Rory's schedule normally. He's obliged to be here. And it's the same deal with Scotty Scheffler. McIlroy's 8-1 best prize. Scheffler's 8-1 best prize. I got no interest in either of them. Scheffler's making his tournament debut. He missed the cut in the 2019 US Open at Pebble Beach, his only visit to this track competitively. I think those two, very easy to ignore. They just wouldn't be here but for the status of the event. I don't expect them to win. Yeah, they're so consistent that they're probably finishing the top 10, but I don't expect them to win. Yeah, the tempting one, Jack, as you alluded to there, was Victor Hovland. I mean, he's 12-1. So he's 12-1, bigger price than the other two. And his Pebble Beach record is amazing. He won the 2018 US Amateur at Pebble Beach. He didn't just win the event, absolutely destroyed. He humiliated some of his opponents that week. And that was played over Pebble Beach and Spyglass Hill, that 2018 US Amateur. He played well on both courses. But there's some strange things happening with Hovland, Joe. I don't know if you've been following. I mean, some strange things happening. Do you remember how we were disappointed at the end of last year, how he started the Hero World Challenge and he didn't give a media conference and it was all very odd? You know, the star attraction going for the three-peat, didn't give a media conference. That was a bit odd. But then subsequently discovered that he's just axed his coach. He switched coaches. So he's had the season of his life. He's won the FedEx Cup and then he's axed his coach and he's recruited a new coach, Grant Waite. Mr. Mayo has been banished. His previous coach was Joseph Mayo. He's gone. Grant Waite's in. So why would you switch coaches after the season he's had? And then he had a really lackluster effort at the Century on his reappearance, finished 22nd in the Century and hasn't played since. You know, completely absent from the tour since the Century. You know, one of the only elite players that's not been around. And obviously that's fueled the live rumours, you know, the live rumour mills in overdrive about Victor Hovland. You know, people are assuming he's going to live. Strange things happening were enough to put me off. His course credentials are superb, but I don't know what's going on with him mentally. He might not be mentally in the right place.
Okay. The last I saw of Victor Hovland, not personally, I mean, I don't know Victor Hovland, but I saw a TikTok of him doing the most ridiculous sort of leg workout routine. And I was sat on the sofa eating some Quavers, I think, going, Corvallis, difficult.
I saw that one,
I'll leave that to Victor. Yeah, just, I mean, some of the positions he was getting, I don't even think my body could do.
No, I certainly can. I can't walk at the moment. Did you notice the one he did with the medicine ball as well?
Yeah.
When he just lurching and lobbing the medicine ball down. I mean, yeah, why would you do that? How's that going to help you? Yeah, that just looked like you're going to get injured, didn't it? I mean, I would get injured with one of them. He's doing loads of them, but I guess
why can't you walk at the moment?
Oh, well, yeah. That's just still that injury from before Lapland. Do you remember? It's the connection between the leg and the abdomen. I don't really. Right. What is that muscle?
Have you been to a physio?
No, I haven't been to a physio. But the top of the leg connecting to the trunk, is that that's the bit that's gone. Something's twanged in there, okay. And the Lapland heavy boots in Lapland ripped it even more. I think it must be a torn ligament.
Right. Okay.
In the top of the leg there, so that's what I've been struggling with. It's a shame because I was, I had my running boots on and I was flying when I, but I'm gone at the game now.
Okay, well, maybe switch the running for a point to point viewing career. Right, one more tournament to preview, Steve, and it's LIV Golf.
Yes,
Mayakoba, first LIV event of the year. We are at El Camaleon. That's it. Just great, isn't it? El Camaleon. Talk that's us through it. The layout.
Yeah, it's an old favourite, isn't it? Yeah, in Playa del Carmen, Mexico. 7,116 yards for this event. Par 71, three par fives. El Camaleon was a PGA Tour venue from 2007 through 2022. Tight, fiddly track. Precision required. We've got a calm round one, but we've got two breezy days thereafter. Sunny and warm, but testing. Accurate drivers typically prosper. And I'll just run you through the details. 6:15 p.m. start on Friday. Shotgun start. And we've got 54 players going to post this week, Jack. Used to be 48 for live events. We got 54 because we got a new team. You must have been following this avidly. We've got a new team, or new franchise, as they like to call it. Legion 13, which is...
sounds like Legion, a fighter plane, doesn't it?
Legion 13, captained by John Rahm. Tyrrell Hatton, of course, has come in to sign for Legion 13.
Were you surprised about that news?
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't. I mean, it's 50 million or 60 million? Yeah, so it's a huge amount of money. And, you know, with the way the landscape is now, you know, surely at some stage everyone's going to come together. Maybe me being optimistic. I think this is the time to take the money. If you're going to sign for Liv, sign now, because, they're all going to come together anyway and sort this out, because the majors...
I think I was reading, so Hatton got $60 million for signing on, and from his previous 122 starts, he'd made 22. Yeah. So he's made triple the money for signing up to live. It just doesn't make any sense.
No. It makes it very difficult for these guys to turn it down. But I mean, it's a really imbalanced team, Legion 13, because as far as I know, you got John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton, Ryder Cup partners, world-class players, and they're going to be joined in that team by Caleb Surratt and Kieran Vincent. So Caleb Surratt is this young amateur, 19-year-old, I think he is, who's a very promising amateur that's just signed. And Kieran Vincent qualified in that Live Promotions event, they called it, like their Q school. So he got one of the three cards. So he got two great players and two. Well, this Surratt looks quite handy, but obviously young and experienced. Legion 13 is a fascinating side. And then, yeah, the plot thickens, Jack. And the plot thickens because you're probably thinking, I can see your little head whirring away there. You're probably thinking, how is it 54 players? Because, yeah, there's 13 teams of four makes 52.
Yes. So we've got that math, but makes sense.
We've got 54 players going to post. And I'm with you. I'm thinking this is very odd. But you've got two players that are just going to be invited to play in the individual competition. They're just playing as individuals.
Who's that?
Well, get this. Laurie Cantor. who I thought was fully focused. I thought he was fully focused on the DP World Tour. You know, he was enjoying himself over in Dubai. He's got the phone call from Liv, and suddenly he's back over to Mexico. And, you know, no wonder he was a little bit distracted and, you know, massively underperformed in the last fortnight in the Middle East. Laurie Cantor and Hudson Swafford, according to my sources, are just going over to play in the individual event because they want 18 three balls, you see. Then you can have 18. So you can have 18 three balls. So they've generated this extra team to get John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. Now they're thinking the three balls don't work. Let's invite a couple of others. I mean, it's pretty shambolic, if you ask me, to just have two randoms in there that are not even in any teams, because they often talk about the team element being so important, don't they?
Yeah, the issue with all of this is if you want to create a fun and kind of exciting format, you need some consistency, don't you? And you're going into these events going, oh, I wonder what they're going to do this week. I wonder who's playing this week.
Yeah. It's very hard for a tipster as well, because I was up till midnight last night trying to get my head around who was playing in this golf tournament. I shouldn't have to work that hard to find out, should I? But so we got 54. So we have one tip.
Okay, one tip. Yeah. The favourite, overwhelming favourite, John Rahm, 19-4. Joachim Niemann, 14s, alongside Hatton, DeChambeau, Cameron Smith, 16-1. DJ, 18-1. Taylor Gooch, same price. Bigger the rest. Steve, just the one. Who is it?
It's Joachim Niemann. Couple of firms out. I've seen 14-1. who I think will start the LIV season extremely strongly. He's determined to get his first LIV victory. It's surprising to both him and me that he hasn't got off the mark yet. And he kept himself really busy just before Christmas. He hasn't had much time off, Jack. You know, a lot of these players coming back from huge breaks. You know, Dustin Johnson has probably only just woken up from a, you know, several months of partying. But Wackham has kept himself busy. He was fifth in the Australian PGA Championship in November. Then he won the Australian Open in December. Then he started 2024 with fourth place in the Dubai Desert Classic, which was a brilliant effort on his course debut. You know, Neiman's in fantastic nick. He's got so much less rust than most of the field he's facing this week. And El Camaleon, yeah, perfect place. A breezy El Camaleon, don't forget, this week. 2 days of breeze. Perfect place for Neiman to show off his skill set. He's great in the wind. You know, really low ball flight, you know, makes him a natural. The last time he played El Camaleon on the PGA Tour was in 2021, and he finished fifth. Then in the inaugural LIV Mayakoba last year, he finished 11th. He's won plenty of titles in Mexico as an amateur. I fully expect him to triumph this week, actually, amongst his Spanish-speaking cousins.
Yeah, Joaquim. Don't fancy Mr. Rahm?
I'll tell you a fascinating fact about Mr. Rahm. His PGA Tour debut was at El Camaleon in 2014. His PGA Tour debut, El Camaleon 20, he missed the cut, and now he makes his LIV debut on the same course. He can't miss the cut, of course. I think he'd be really keen to do well this week. Obviously, I think he would have been practicing half of this. But yeah, he's a short price, 4-1 favorite. Makes no appeal at the odds. I'm all over one player. The only other one I consider was Maito Pereira, the other Chilean. I think Wackham Neiman, it looks the business this week. Yeah, you could argue he's the best golf bet of the week. I know a lot of punters don't get involved in LIV because they don't think the players are trying. But I think Neiman's pretty angry he's not won one of these LIV events this week. And yeah, this looks made for him. Yeah, I really like 14-1 Wackham Neiman.
Are you playing the each way treble?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked. Of course I am. Unfortunately, home has just been cut. Before I came on air, it was 20-1, 20-1, 14-1. At 20s, 20s and 14s, the treble is 6,614-1. That's Nakajima, Homer and Neiman. It'd be 18-1, 20-1 and 14-1 now. My math's not quite sharp enough to work that out without a calculator.
I couldn't work at 18-3, Steve, so I'm not going to try and work that out.
But yes, it'd be a great treble. Yeah, definitely have that one.
Great stuff, Steve. Well, that was a mammoth. I mean, you peaked last week with your weekend. I mean, what have you got in store for the rest of this week?
I think I take each day as it comes. I'm really looking forward to the start of the Premier League darts. Yeah, we seem to love talking about darts. That starts on Thursday. I think Rob Cross, Geraint Price and Michael Van Gerwen, if you put those three in a treble in their matches, their quarterfinal matches, I think that's a really solid treble that pays around 2-1. So have that treble. And then if that wins, put some money towards a very noble cause, which Jack Reeve is doing, which I've been forgetting to mention. All of January, Jack Reeve has been running every single day, like 5 kilometres, I think it is, raising money for a very good cause. So my advice would be to have that Premier League treble on Cross, Price and Van Gerwen, and then donate to this charity, which Jack's going to guide you through now.
Well, yeah, I'm doing it all for Mind, which is obviously the mental health charity, Steve, which I know we both feel is very important. Yeah, running 5 kilometres a day, I am completely and utterly broken at this point. I've got 2 to go. So going out this lunchtime to get it done. It's raining here, so that won't be fun. And then tomorrow is my final day. And then Thursday, I'd forgotten the Premier League darts start. So I'm going to have my first beer of the year and I'm going to watch the darts. And I'm going to have some nice food. And that is going to be absolutely glorious. Yeah.
Beautiful. So he's been running every day in horrible weather conditions to raise money for this great charity. So come on, let's dig deep for Jack Reeve.
Thanks, Steve. That's very kind of you. Shall we run through the selection so people can jot them down? We shall start in Bahrain and we will work through in chronological order. Bahrain Championship, 6 runners.
Keita Nakajima, Yannick Paul, Alex Fitzpatrick, Harrison Endicott, Hugo Cousaud, Matthew Baldwin. Should we spell Hugo Cousaud just for...
You can, yeah. I mean, Callum will put it on screen, but you're more than welcome
Callum
to
will
spell
put it. Callum will put it on screen. No, no.
It off the top of your head. Go on, look straight into the camera and spell it.
COUSSAUD.
And I was thinking, how do you spell Ugo with a C?
Oh, sorry, I didn't bother with Ugo. I think there's only one spelling of Ugo, isn't there?
Pebble Beach, Steve.
Pebble Beach, Max Homer, Matthew Fitzpatrick. You know, there'd be some patriotic Englishmen out there who could have the Fitzpatrick double and be very excited by that. You're you're a patriotic Englishman, aren't you?
Yeah, so, I mean, I am very sorry. That was my excited face.
You're worried about us going over the hour mark, aren't you? I'm tempted to just talk for the next 7 minutes to make sure we get over it. Just to freak out the social media chiefs.
And then Liv Golf.
Whack'em Neiman. So we've only got 9 selections across 3 tournaments. So, yeah, I know there were panic when I said 6, but we've only got 9 selections across 3 tournaments. It's pretty reserved, really. It's a viable staking plan.
Why don't you see if your point-to-point boy is running this weekend and we'll make it 10?
Oh, Octo John, yeah. Yeah, I was with a fella that knows much more about horse racing than me, and he was guiding me through this thing. So, do you know much about horse racing? What happens to the point at the point to point? These basically get sold, don't they? It's like an auction, isn't it? So
yeah.
I think they go and people go and look at these horses and say, oh yeah, I fancy buying that, I fancy that. I wouldn't be surprised if Octo John's been snapped up by JP Magnier.
McManus. This is where you really need Bruce Millington back on the show, sort of guide you through the journey of a point to pointer.
I can't provide
you with such.
You can't provide me that. I besmirched JP McManus there. I met JP McManus at a dinner at Adair Manor. Lovely fella. Yeah, very quietly spoken. I got a lot of time for him. I didn't mean him there. I'm sure there's some Magnier fella.
There is a Magnier.
Olivier Pellier. Olivier Peslier. Maybe Olivier Peslier will buy him. I think he was a jockey, actually, wasn't he? Right. You can see my determination to get these over the hour mark. If you're watching, guys, and you're rich, buy Octo John. It looked a bloody good horse to me.
Steve, thanks very much. That was a journey. We've got 3 tournaments again next week, so we'll rest up for that. If you're watching along and you're backing Steve's tips, please remember to do so responsibly. A big thank you to producer Callum. Stay safe, everyone. See you later. Bye-bye.